Hello again and Happy New Year. Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong. We're back for our weekly visit here on the markets as we ended 2013 and started 2014. And what a year 2013 turned out to be in the stock market. Every year on December 31st, on New Year's Eve, I make my prediction on where the stock market will end 12 months later. Well, a year ago on December 31st, I factored in a 9% increase in the stock market. Boy, was I off. I estimated the Dow would end the year at 14,284. It ended well above 16,600 and gains of 28 and 29%. Two things that I think happened. Number one, the Federal Reserve maintained its heavy stimulus program, that $85 billion bond purchase every month. And secondly, Europe quieted down. We hardly talked about Europe and financial crises in countries in the Eurozone, and that combination brought a strong performance into the stock market. Now, can we maintain that for 2014? I feel that we probably won't. As a matter of fact, my guess for the Dow on December 31st of this year, 16,250. That's a slight decline from where it is today, but I base that on the fact that prices never go the same way forever. As far as the world of agriculture, we have seen a pretty strong wheat market. We're concerned about weather in the next few days and what it could do to the wheat crop in the Southwest. And the corn market has been hurting simply because China has been canceling corn cargoes because of the unwanted GMO strain. The interesting thing about that is the GMO strain that they are rejecting is accepted by just about every other corn importing nation in the world. And they were not able to hammer out that situation when Secretary Vilsack traveled to China shortly before Christmas. And so China is still canceling corn cargoes, but also now canceling distilled dried grain cargoes that have that unwanted GMO strain. The markets, what's ahead? Well, Max Armstrong visited this week with Arlen Suderman of Water Street Solutions, who commented he's not sure we have seen the low in the corn market.
Yeah, I continue to be concerned about a second harvest low in the corn market, although I think the next low will have more to do with weakening basis maybe than futures, but futures are vulnerable as well. It's really going to come down to the soybean market because corn needs to lose some acres to soybeans for the 2014 growing season. And so if the market becomes comfortable with a big crop in South America pushing November 2014 soybeans lower, then corn's going to have to go lower as well to try to discourage corn planting this next year. And we certainly have plenty of old crop supplies. However, if a legitimate threat to the crop emerges that supports soybean prices and thereby supporting the November 2014 contract, then I think that'll allow corn prices to work their way higher too reluctantly. But right now I'm concerned with the way where things are playing out about a secondary harvest low between now and when we warm up this spring with a lot more corn coming to town. Farmers put a lot of corn in the bin a little wetter than they'd like, and it needs to come to town.
Yeah, that's the case, especially when you look, I guess, at some of those Iowa producers who wound up planting late. It did have a high moisture content, didn't it?
Yeah, they really did. That corn also is a little lower protein than normal, so I guess the good news is that's increasing the consumption of corn. It's also increasing the demand for soy meal in DDGs. But lo and behold, we've still got some wet corn in the bin that needs to go to the end user before we start warming things up.
That holiday pig crop report didn't help any, I guess, the other day in terms of corn demand, did it?
No, it really did not, showing that the PED virus has reduced our numbers somewhat. We are seeing higher farrowing intentions really through May, about 1% above year-ago levels, but we're going to have to do it with a smaller breeding herd based on that USDA report. Corn consumption is going to be a little bit less than what we previously thought.
What about demand internationally for our corn?
Demand is good. It's just that we have such a big supply. The pipeline, not just here in the United States, but globally, was very tight. And so not only are we having to meet the demand that's there, but refill the pipeline. There's a lot of customers that want to refill that. So I think we're going to see a higher production estimate from USDA in their January report, but that'll also be combined with higher export demand as well as, I think, ethanol production in order to offset some of those increases.
You talked about soybeans a little bit earlier. As we take a look at that bean market over the long haul, I mean, since it is the kind of the bright spot in the grains at the moment, is that possibly going to encourage over the longer term here, looking forward, more bean acreage in the United States and maybe water down that market too?
Yeah, that's the objective of the market, is to try to get more soybeans. For the last couple of years, the global market's been going hand to mouth, living from the northern hemisphere crop to the southern hemisphere crop, always keeping its fingers crossed that we're going to get the big crop, the next one coming in 6 months. If South America has a big crop, we can finally start building those supplies a little bit, and then it'll come down to whether the U.S. crop can be a good size as well. But for right now, the market wants to build a little bit more of a buffer in there, wants to increase those acreage, and I think we need about 4 million acres to shift from corn to soybeans this next year in order to reach those objectives.
In terms of South America, there hasn't been much of concern there to this point of the growing season. Understand there is a little bit of dryness coming into some places down there. Are you concerned about it? Are you watching that?
Yeah, 90% of the crops are rated good or better in South America, combining Argentina and Brazil and Paraguay. There are some dry spots in Argentina reaching up into southern parts of Brazil. Right now, the forecast is for temperatures to moderate in the coming days in those areas with some rains to reach those areas. If that happens, then I think that we'll go ahead and we'll get that relief in time for the soybean crop. It's still relatively early. Northern Brazil was seeing some excessive rains previously. Those rains are shifting south now to areas that were dry. And as those northern areas dry out, it's actually going to start helping the harvest, the early harvest in that area of Brazil.
Some combining has begun, I guess, on a very limited basis, right?
Yeah, exactly right. A few fields in Mato Grosso last week. We'll see a few more fields in Mato Grosso do Sul and Paraná this week, but we really don't start seeing that momentum build up for harvest until we get into mid-January, and significant supplies don't reach export terminals really until we get into mid-February.
I've been saying, Arlen, I think this is really an important winter for growers. I think this is a winter when they absolutely have to be absorbing the knowledge, sharpening marketing skills. Do you sense we've gotten a little bit sloppy at our marketing skills here in an era when we didn't have to market quite as sharply as perhaps we will in the future?
I wholeheartedly agree. I am bullish agriculture and believe that we're going to continue to have opportunity in agriculture, but we're going to have to work harder in order to take advantage of those opportunities. It's not going to be handed to us over the next few years in our marketing. The markets have rewarded producers with waiting to sell their crops in recent years. And I think we're entering a part of the cycle now where they're going to have to be a little bit more aggressive in finding those opportunities. We could wait and kind of be lazy in our marketing and pass and hit home runs. Now we're going to have more singles and doubles in order to get that price up there above the level that we need in order to pay our bills, particularly with some cash rents still being very high.
Are you hearing about any of those coming down? I mean, how have those conversations gone? Have those folks who got accustomed to those higher prices have been pretty stubborn about dropping them back down?
Yeah, land values for the most part are still high, so landlords are looking at cash rents as a percent of what they've invested in that land, and they think those cash rents should remain high. They've gotten accustomed to that income level. They don't really want to let go of those levels. And a lot of farmers know how competitive land is, and so they don't want to push the issue too hard yet this year, afraid that a neighbor will come in and snatch that land away from them. So this year we're not really seeing that big of a drop in cash rents. It may take another year of low prices in order to force that issue.
3, 2, 1. There's no question there could be some tense moments in rural coffee shops around farm country this year, the issue being high cash rents and lower grain prices. We're going to talk livestock because Max had the opportunity to sit down and talk to Sarah Muirhead, who is the editor and publisher of Feedstuffs. And it's been a record year, or a year end at least, for the cattle market. So we're going to talk about that. And then the disease that is affecting baby pigs across the country. We'll do that when we continue on The Market, sponsored by CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Sarah Muirhead is the editor and publisher of Feedstuffs magazine. She visited with Max Armstrong this week about what's ahead for the livestock industry. As a matter of fact, she brings optimism to that picture.
It has been an interesting few years, but we're setting up for 2014 to be very positive from both the cattle sector and the swine sector. We're looking at cattle numbers that are the second lowest since 1996. So we got some good feed prices coming our way. We've got cost of corn down a third of what it was since August. We've got placements that are down. We've got inventory that's down. So we're going to see some really good profitability, we think, on the cattle sector. Beef prices could be a little higher. So when you go to throw it on the grill this summer, you might see a little bit of an increase there. But overall, on the cattle side, we're seeing some good things. On the hog side, we're seeing there's a little more variability. The feed prices certainly are coming into play, and that's a positive factor. But we're seeing inventory down, which is good. But with lower feed prices, lower inventory, we're kind of looking at what's really going on out there. We're also seeing less pigs per litter. We're thinking PEDV, which is the porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, is starting to play into the market a bit. And that is kind of a real unknown as to how significant that's going to be in terms of prices.
I want to come back to that topic, PEDV, in a moment or two. But first of all, the improved economics, I mean, corn is a big, big, big part of that, is it not? The fact that the price of corn is down. And would I be correct in my understanding that most people who feed hogs and cattle couldn't be too distraught about the corn market falling apart, and at the same time, might not be too supportive of the continued ethanol policy. In other words, I noticed, I think one of my social media friends is the president of the Turkey Federation, and he's been very strident in his comments critical of the ethanol program.
There's been a lot of battling back and forth in terms of what the ethanol program's doing to livestock prices. You see both sides of the discussion. But yes, right now, the livestock industry, the poultry industry, is looking very favorably upon the grain prices that are out there because of the profitability side of things. We've been struggling for a good 4 years on the hog sector. Cattle sector's been under pressure. So finally, we're starting to see some relief in the cost of feeding, and that's a big, big factor.
I've been quoting a pork producer friend of mine who told me outside church this past fall on a Sunday morning, he turned to some of his grain producer friends and said, "It's my turn now."
Exactly.
Turn to books and profits, by all means.
Mm-hmm.
The cattle industry, you know, we like to see a high beef price, a retail beef price, but is it too high? Is it going to be so high in this yet another expected year of record high beef prices that it will price out consumers?
You know, that is an unknown. I think consumers are becoming a little more accepting of higher meat prices. You're also going to see higher prices on the pork sector too. So you're really not going to see that change out that we've had in the past in terms of pork replacing beef. You still have the poultry factor, of course. But I think that you're just going to see consumers, you know, it might change the cuts that they're buying, but they're still going to buy meat.
Poultry can certainly ratchet up their production without much difficulty, can't they?
Oh, they sure can. Yeah, it doesn't take much at all. Time frame is so short compared to the other species.
I noticed those folks, the poultry people, were bristling the other day at the headline story on the front of, was it Consumer Reports? suggesting that, oh, a chicken could kill you. Well, yes, there is such a thing as foodborne illness, especially if consumers don't handle it carefully, right?
Exactly.
It was a little bit blown out of proportion, wasn't it, Sarah?
Yeah, it was. It was a bit exaggerated in terms of the risk. I mean, I think it's always good to remind consumers about the safety, how to safely handle their chicken, any meat, actually. And it's just interesting. So one of the statistics that stuck out for me was the fact that consumers say they cook their chicken properly, but only 30% of them actually use a meat thermometer. So there's just a lot of variability in terms of what's going on out there. I think it was 42%, you know, use a set cutting board just for meat. So there's a lot of things that consumers still can do on their side. Of course, there's a lot of things industry can do, and they are doing. There's some changes going on in the inspection process through USDA, FSIS, and those things are all going to increase the food safety when it comes to our poultry.
Back to the other species for a moment, back to beef. It's going to take a while to really rebuild this herd, is it not? I mean, if indeed the cattle folks are serious about doing this, and I would imagine they would be responding, I mean, there's some things that are going to limit that, and it will just take time, correct?
That's correct. One of the big factors, though, we're looking at in 2014 is the cost of feeder cattle. So how quickly that rebuilding takes place is going to depend on what the cost of that rebuilding is going to
be. While corn is cheaper, certainly the replacement animal there are pricey yet.
Yeah, because there's a shortage of, you know, I mean, their numbers are down on the replacement animal side. We also see Brazil being a factor. They're coming on strong with meat exports, beef exports in 2014. So that certainly could shore up the market a little bit for us on the export side. So a couple variables we're still watching real close.
Do we still have a policy? There was a counter-cyclical policy, I know, in terms of imports at one time, and I haven't looked into that lately to see if it still applies, whereby we allowed more beef imports at a time when our supplies were down domestically. And I don't know if there's still some regulation along that. Maybe that's gone by the wayside in the various trade negotiations that we've had.
I'm not real up to speed on that. I'm not real sure.
Trade policy is so complex, and it changes dramatically from time to time, too. Sometimes it is very slow to happen, but we can see very substantial changes there. Needless to say, producers aren't wild about imports. I don't think there's any producer in the world that likes to see products coming in from some other country to compete with his or hers.
Well, or going into those markets they're exporting to.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
That's where Brazil's going to take up the slack. If we're not exporting into that market, Brazil might be. So
yeah.
That's where that factor comes into play.
Haven't you had the feeling, watching these pig crop reports, the one we got the other day and the one that came out back in the fall, that there was something going on here, especially knowing that there was this virus out there and that maybe it wasn't being fully accounted for yet or taken maybe as seriously as it ought to be? Talk with us about PEDV. What is this thing you referenced earlier?
Well, it's a virus that we first saw in April, first confirmed back in May. It is very, very closely related, like 99.5% related to a strain out of China. The strain in China actually killed 1 million hogs. Piglets, I should say, because it affects the very young pigs. So it's something that we're first seeing here in the United States. It's something that we're learning how to deal with. Our producers really aren't up to speed. Our scientists are, you know, really trying to take a hard look at how we can minimize the impact. We are seeing a lot of baby pigs dying, and they just die very quickly within a matter of a couple days. The mortality on pigs under 7 days of age is 100%. So if you have it in your farm, your pigs are gone. Your little pigs are gone.
Now, the mama sow is okay.
The mama sow is okay. You'll see a decrease in performance. You'll see some weight loss, but they work their way through it. Same thing with the grow finish pigs. Anything over about 20 days of age is going to get through this virus. It's just those young piglets. Like I said, under 7 is 100% mortality. 7 to 10 is about 75% mortality. And then it, you know, goes down as they get a little older. But it's how we can, there's no vaccine, there's no immunity, there's no proven way to, you know, help these piglets through it. What happens is the virus goes in and attacks the villi within the intestine, and they can't get any hydration. And then at the same time, they've got this severe diarrhea and vomiting. and they just dehydrate and they're gone within a couple days.
So what does the producer do then? Do you depopulate and then start all over, clean the barns and start again? Is that what has to happen?
That's what has to happen. You do get, I mean, you can keep your sows and you're building immunity when they're exposed to it, but of course you have to dispose of the baby pigs. They're recommending composting those, but you have to get them off site. There's a lot of things.
That's got to be a big concern for producers, just taking care of the mortality problem.
And, you know, there's an image issue there. There's a issue with what do you do with the pigs. There's also a risk that, you know, as you're hauling pigs around, rendering trucks and hauling trucks are one of the main sources that it's being spread.
This is only affecting the health of the animals, and this is an important point. I want to underscore this for folks who might have tuned in and heard us talking about this. The quality, the safety, the nutritional value of the pork product from mature hogs is not affected at all, right?
Exactly. There's no human risk. There's no food safety risk associated with this disease.
So there are a lot of question marks about it from the producer's standpoint, but it may, just to come back to what we were saying earlier, this may be limiting what had been expected to be a pretty impressive expansion in hog numbers eventually here as we went on through 2014.
Certainly could be, yeah. There's a lot that could, there's some positive things that could come out of this.
The pigs per litter number, especially in that pig crop report the other day, was a sign, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm, I think so. We're also seeing, you know, I'm hearing folks say that it could be kind of a blessing in disguise because this isn't a disease, as we've talked about, that affects food safety or human health. So, and this is a disease that came in from overseas. So it might really give us some insight and some opportunities to shore up things so that we don't have some of those diseases that could be of higher risk coming through our borders.
A good warning sign, you're saying.
Foot and mouth disease, swine fever, and those kinds of things. So we really need to watch it. We really need to learn from it. And we really need to just ramp up on the biosecurity side of our industry.
I just assumed that biosecurity was huge already, and I knew it is with many producers. I've had guys tell me, hey, if you're coming in here, pal, you got to shower in. Hey, we don't care, you know, when you leave here, but we want you showering in. We want you to put on the little footies. You've got to put on, the garb that we have here. And yet I visited another producer 6 months later. Yeah, come on in. Bring your camera in. Yeah, you guys just walk on in. And I'm looking at the cameraman thinking, wait, what's this all about? And in actuality, there are some folks who aren't as careful as others, right?
Exactly. And I was at one of those farms just a couple weeks ago. And they're like, oh, you don't have to bother with that. We did. You know, we suited up and changed boots about 5 times and all those kinds of things because we'd just been at a pork producer meeting. About 300 pork producers were there. Who knows? Some of them could have had the virus on their bottom of their boots and walked through, and we walked through it. It's just that contagious and that much of a risk for producers that, of course, when we go on a farm, we don't want to be the source of that. That would be awful.
Yeah, precisely. There was a time, of course, when the hogs were outside, when they were exposed to the elements of Mother Nature, and quite frequently then, I think disease was communicated by birds or other wildlife. That's not the case now, right? I mean, in almost all of these instances and these significant operations in the pork industry today, the disease is spread by man, right?
Spread by man. It's spread by things that are coming into the farm, trucks.
Brought in by man.
Any kind of equipment that might be brought in. You are still seeing issues with rodents. Some of the, there was some statistics I saw this morning out of North Carolina. They're not official statistics, but they're showing that rodents and raccoons and such that are getting into the barns are a source of the PEDV virus. As well as trucks that are coming to pick up the dead stock, trucks that are coming to bring in, you know, negative animals.
Because they're going from one farm to another.
Farm to farm is the big thing. Veterinarians can also transfer it from farm to farm. So they're ramping up on a lot of things. And we've even seen some reports of where a barn worker will go to the local convenience store, fill up with gas, run in for a Mountain Dew and a donut, and he's leaving it on the floor where another barn worker is going to walk through it and take it to the farm. So it doesn't take much. It lives for a long time, and it's highly contagious. So we need to really take a lot of precautions out there.
Finally, in summary, lest we forget, the livestock industry, while there are sectors of our country where it's very, very strong, is still very important in our part of the country. When you put it all together, the cows we milk, the cattle that are yet fed out here, and pork operations, hog operations, right, even in our northern Illinois region.
Oh, exactly. Huge economic contributions to the state of Illinois and to this region and across the United States, actually.
Indeed, agriculture does play an important role in the economy of the United States. And our thanks to Sarah Muirhead, the editor and publisher of Feedstuffs, for joining us on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Week turned out to be another record-setting week for the cattle industry. We keep seeing that market set new records in live cattle futures and also in cash cattle futures, up to $137 a hundredweight this week. Here in Arizona, I visited with Andy Grossetta, the former president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, and he said, we need to increase the numbers of cattle, and higher prices should do that. Indeed, it should. So where did we end the week at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange? Well, we ended today with the February lean hog contract at $86.70. That was down 37 cents. But when you look into the year midsummer, the prices were at $99.67 for July hog futures. The live cattle contract ended the week today at $136.25 a hundredweight, and that was up 62 cents. Checking the milk price, the January milk price back above $20. It ended at $20.02, and that was a gain of 36 cents for the day. So we've seen milk come back just a little bit. Now, the CME Group, the operator of the Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, the oil market in New York, and several other markets reported their trading volume for the last month of the year. And the CME Group volume averaged 10.9 million contracts per day in December. That was up 13% from December a year ago. And the CME Group said fourth quarter volume in 2013 was up 11%. One other interesting note in that report of trade volume, 85% of the more than 228 million contracts traded were traded electronically at the board and the Merck. Now, looking at the Board of Trade ending this first week of the new year, concern about cold temperatures in wheat country, particularly where it's dry and there's very little snow cover, 2 inches or so, and we're looking at temperatures 15 to 25 degrees below zero, that is concerning wheat traders, and as a result today, the wheat market March ended $6.06, up 8 3/4, so it brought it back above the $6 level again. March corn, this one surprised me a little bit. It ended 3 cents higher for the day, ending the week at 4.23 3/4, surprising to me because of the fact that China has been canceling those corn contracts. And we saw the dried distillers grain plunge this week by as much as $30 or $40 a ton. And that happened because China, the country that is one of our major corn importers, was canceling cargoes. The U.S. Department of Agriculture reported a net cancellation of 116,000 tons in corn sales to China in the week ended December 26, and that is the most in a single week since October of 2012. So the corn market still higher on the day, recovering from earlier lows this week. Soybeans, Crop conditions apparently improving in South America, particularly in Argentina, where crop conditions for both corn and soybeans are improving. But we ended the week with a gain for the day. The January soybean contract ended 3 cents higher, and that was $12.90 at the end of the trading week. That's just about our time for our get-together this week. Next weekend, we'll be in San Antonio, Texas, for the annual convention, the 95th convention of the American Farm Bureau Federation. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson. Thank you for joining us on The Markets, sponsored by CME Group.